Welcome to this week's edition of The Sword and Staff. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Robinson, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host,
Sketchy Richie.
Boy, you're sticking with that, aren't you?
I am.
Every episode for this, like past month.
This is it.
Everybody, well, I think it's stuck at this point. Everybody's been telling us to release the Sketchy, and it's a thing now.
Here he is.
And so he's here. So, but on this week's edition of The Sword and Staff, Richie...
Khonshu was just here, too.
Ah, yeah, Khonshu was just here. on this week's edition of The Sword Staff, Richie and I are going to be having a discussion on Marvel's Moon Knight.
Yep.
And why we think that it's important, why we think that you guys should watch it and should be thinking about it. And yeah, so we're not going to be doing a full review because it's not finished yet. Yep. There's only been three episodes released so far. Richie, you've seen one and a half of them. I've seen all three of them. But there's some interesting stuff going on with this show.
Yep.
And the thing that I think is interesting is there is a lot of Divine Council worldview stuff going on in this show.
Yeah.
And so just to kind of get us started today, Richie, just tell the listeners, you've seen that one and a half episodes so far. So yep. What do you think about it?
Well, basically, I'm about to sue Disney because it's a story about my life.
How so?
The guy, he's single, he's sketchy, he talks to his fish, he has missing time episodes, anxiety,
yeah.
And he's a conduit for some sketchy spirit. I mean, that literally could have been my life the past 7 years.
Yeah, he's an avatar for a principality.
I mean.
Named Khonshu, and so it hits home for you, I think.
It does, in a weird way.
All right. Seriously, what do you think of it? Like, did you like it? Is it weird? Like, what do you think? Like, just in terms of Marvel. Like,
as a Marvel movie, so far there's nothing about it that would make me think Marvel when I look at it. Like, it's just that standalone. It's that different. It's just a different tone, a different feel.
It is a different tone.
Than any other Marvel movie I've seen.
Puts me kind of in the mind of something DC would do.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of dark.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But I think that there's some reasons for why it's dark, and we'll talk about that a little bit.
Closest thing, maybe, that it ties into is with Eternals, like that sort of overlap with the Divine Council stuff. But like it's not like Thor and Avengers or anything like that.
No,
it's not very superhero-y.
Yeah, it's a whole different vibe,
right.
A whole different feel to it, like. You know, we had talked last night. You and I talked about this for about like an hour or so last night before we did today's episode. But, you know, like Thor and Odin, they've got a real superhero feel to them.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was sort of Disney sort of dipping the toes in the whole spirituality thing. But this, things like this.
This is full on.
This and Eternals and even the reworking of the mutants and things.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a dive into the occult, a dive into spirituality.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, but yeah. Anyway, we wanted to have a conversation about some of this today because, you know, we were checking it out, and you know, Richie I think is familiar with some of the comic books, and you know, I wasn't. I've just seen the show, and you know, that kind of stuff. But we thought that there were some interesting themes that were as worthy of conversation, and we've reviewed a lot of Marvel stuff so far,
yep.
So it was only appropriate that we reviewed Moon Knight. So let's kind of take it from the top. So Richie, in the first episode, pretty early on, we meet the main character, which is Steven, aka Mark Spector, aka yep. Moon Knight. He's got a lot going on. Like he doesn't
yeah.
know what's going on with him. But he's having problems like sleeping, so he like ties himself to his bed.
Oh, he's like chained to bedposts and everything else. Yeah,
yeah, because he just randomly wakes up in random spots, so he thinks that he's got like a lot of mental health things going on, which he does have some mental health things going on, but it's a little bit deeper than that, right?
Yep.
There is another personality within him who is the avatar of an Egyptian god named Khonshu, and which we'll get into, you know, some Khonshu stuff here in a minute.
I can relate.
I hope not.
I mean, I could. I did. Yeah,
you could at one point. But pretty early on, like Steven's kind of nerdy, like
yep.
you were talking about. He works at like a museum in the gift shop.
Yep.
And so he's talking. You kind of get a glimpse of
Stephen of the gift shop.
Stephen of the gift shop. You get a glimpse of some of the story going on here, some of the backstory, and it's an Egyptian story called the Aeneid. Yep. It's not to be confused with the Greco-Roman story of the Aeneid. They're different. But basically, the Aeneid is the it's called the Great Aeneid. But it's basically the story about a group of nine deities in Egyptian mythology that was worshipped at Heliopolis. And so so in the story, you see the sun god Adam, his children Shu, Tefnut, their children Geb and Nut, and their children Osiris, Isis, Set, and Nephthys. Some of the Aeneid, there's differing versions of it. From what I understand, what happened was as the Egyptians begin to unify into a dynasty, what they ended up doing was bringing numerous of the local cults together and kind of forming this greater pantheon. Yep. Story, kind of bringing these, you know, unique local deities, principalities, into a larger meta-narrative is basically what's going on. So some of, like, so there's a couple things like the pyramid texts of Dynasty 5 and Dynasty 6. It mentions the Great Aeneid, the Lesser Aeneid, the Dual Aeneid, and the Seven Aeneids. So so there's some differing versions of it out there. And but it, you kind of catch a glimpse of the story in Moon Knight, and it's really, really interesting because there's some major divine council overlap here. But there's a scene pretty early on where Stephen is reading. You can't see it on my phone. Yep. Oops, I got my flashlight on here. Let me turn that off. But you guys can't see it on camera, but Richie, you can see it. But it's he's reading the Aeneid. And we paused it on it.
Yep.
And was reading it. And what it says is really, really interesting. So it says this. It says, originally, the Egyptians reverenced one god, only whose likeness was never represented. He was being worshipped in silence. Then it goes on, it says, his characteristics, however, were represented by visible, and he can't tell what it says.
I think it looks like shapes.
Yeah, maybe it says shapes or something like that. But here's why I think that's interesting. Because apparently there was a time in Egyptian myth when there was this one creator god, and he's uncreated, and he's not to be represented. And that sounds a lot like the God of Israel.
When I read that, it reminded me a lot of Romans 1, where they talk about his
invisible attributes.
Invisible attributes and natural revelation and things like that.
Yeah. And so it's interesting that there was a time in Egypt's history where they were reverencing one god whose likeness wasn't to be represented. I mean, this it immediately reminded me of Sinai. They just come out of Egypt.
Yep.
And God gives to them the command not to make any images or representations of him,
yep.
Right? And so that's what it put me in the mind of. But you were talking, you're like, oh, what, man, that's just wild because, like, they have so many, like, they've got this pantheon where they worship.
They never have a problem making icons and images of their of the other members of the pantheon, like Anubis, Horus, Osiris. I mean, you see depictions of these human deity animal hybrids, these the way they depict their gods any other time. So this one god was sort of off limits to that.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting.
And here's my theory on that, and we were talking about. My theory is that it makes a lot of sense if there was a time in Egypt's history early on, perhaps that's been lost and only carried on in parts, like in some of this story, where they knew that there was one true god. And then I'm connecting it back to the Babel story.
Yeah.
When there was all of the nations knew there was one true God, and whenever Yahweh placed over them the sons of God, and then they end up turning against Yahweh and becoming the gods of the nations. It makes plenty of sense in the narrative we find in Scripture. Like Egypt is one of the nations mentioned in the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10.
Right.
It makes sense why this story would be kind of lost and forgotten whenever they're scattered out and the principalities turn against the one true God and become the pantheon of this country. Yep. Makes plenty of sense why you would still yet have that peace. Like, there was one true God at one point, and he wasn't to be represented. But then somehow that gets lost, and then we worship this pantheon. Just major, major divine council overtones there. So that's a little bit of the backstory. So we'll talk about Khonshu now and where Khonshu comes from and how he kind of fits into all this. So you want to...
And honestly, go ahead. Just thinking about that, if you think about some of the oldest and earliest sort of cultures and their deities, they tend to be very slim on the pantheon. Like you don't see... Like maybe you'll see a handful of divine figures or very monotheistic even. Mm-hmm. Like even in Samaria and things like that. But it's now it seems like as time goes forward that this polytheism is a modern construct compared to ancient times.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. But that totally makes sense, like within the narrative of Babel, right? All of the nations at one point would have been monotheistic, and then sometime after the sons of God rebel, like Psalm 82, they end up with a pantheon later on at some point in their history. So, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So one of the gods, though, that we run into in Moon Knight is Khonshu. And so you want to tell people a little bit about Khonshu, a little bit you know about him? And
Khonshu was just in the bathroom across the hallway. Was the reason we had to cut the episode. He showed up.
Yeah, we had to start the episode over because lights started randomly flickering in the bathroom. Very much like what happens to Steve.
I'm telling you. Yeah. That's why I said he's here. I mean, he showed up.
Tell him to go home. Tell him to go back to Egypt. But go
that's
ahead.
That's what's going to happen at the end of the episode. We're going to give you a how-to guide to contact your own principality deity, your own avatar, Condor.
No, we're not. We will give you a ritual on how to expel those from your house.
Oh, is that going to be in the uncut section?
That's in today's uncut section for this. So. But anyway, well, go ahead and tell people a little bit about Khonshu. I've got some theories about Khonshu. I think that there's some, it gets Hellenized a little bit later on. But
to be honest, yeah. I used to study a lot of ancient Egyptian myths, and I mean, back in the day, I was all into The Mummy and those movies and Indiana Jones and anything like that.
I wanted to be an Egyptologist.
I did too at one point.
Yeah.
But I'd never paid any attention to the Egyptian moon god or goddess or anything like that, anything to do with the moon. Yeah. Egypt is such a sun focused culture.
Right. You have the sun god, you have Atum.
Ra and Horus and these things.
In Heliopolis, you had a moon, and Heliopolis is related to the sun.
Yeah, so you had
a sun cult there.
Yeah, it's like the sun temple.
Yep.
Like sun city. But I'd never paid any attention to the moon aspect of it or even thought about a moon deity associated with the Egyptians until we got onto this.
Yeah. Well, so Khonshu was the god of the moon, and also he's associated with time. And you can see it, like the moon, it's fixing the heavens, right along with the sun, and it's a light, and they govern time. He travels. So basically in the mythology, his name means traveler, the traveler. And he also has titles like the Embracer, the Pathfinder, that kind of thing. But basically that reflects the fact that the moon travels across the night sky.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's depicted though as being like a mummy. He has a crook in one hand and a flail in the other. It's kind of like a fly swatter. And so that's basically what it is. There's some symbolism going on there, because with the crook you're able to pull close, and with the flail you're able to run off.
Yep.
Jonathan Peugeot had a video, and I saw
it's basically the rhythms of the moon and push and pull.
Yeah, that's spot on. Yeah, that's good. The interesting thing, though, is that in some of the Egyptian myth, there was a Khonshu cult in Thebes. He was really worshipped in Thebes, and there's still yet a temple there dedicated to him. And apparently it's pretty well preserved.
Still standing.
Yeah, still standing and pretty well preserved. But anyway, he apparently, so it says his temple at Karnak. is in relatively good state of preservation. One of the walls depicted a creation myth in which Khonsu is described, get this, as the great snake who fertilizes the cosmic egg in the creation of the world. So in Egyptian myth, he is associated with the serpent, with the moon, the serpent who goes around the world, like the world snake, which is kind of a symbol for time, right?
Right.
Like time, you see depicted in like the Ouroboros, right? The snake that's eating its tail and it's going around in like in a circle.
Yeah.
So Khonsu is related to that in Egyptian mythology. And so you think about that. So you've got serpent, you've got time, you've got waters, moon. These are chaotic type of themes. So I'm really working off of the work of Jonathan and Matthew Peugeot here. But they talk about the symbolism of time in his book, The Language of Creation. And basically, here's what they say. There are these starting points wouldn't be good. Well, they basically say that the Bible lays out this worldview where you have heaven and earth. Heaven's masculine, earth is feminine. The heaven is ethereal, right? Earth is material.
Right.
And then you have, it's like a fire and the opposite of it. So there's these opposites.
Yep.
And time and space, so that's kind of like relate, kind of can kind of map onto like up and down.
Yeah.
Time and space kind of map onto like left or right. Okay. So time is the serpent or the waters pushed up out above the firmament by the cosmic tree, right? So in Genesis, you've got this world tree, the tree of life, and it shoves the waters and the firmament upwards, and there's waters above and below the firmament. So that's time that goes around.
Right.
And then I know we're probably talking a foreign language here.
Yep.
To some people, but some people I know will be able to listen to this and know exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. People who are interested.
And we'll post some like graphic images and things to show you what
yeah.
we mean by that.
Yeah. Well, we'll just basically explain it this way. In ancient cosmology, the way that people understood, and this is going to get into some flat earth stuff.
And this sort of thing is a shared cosmological view
yeah.
over many cultures. I mean, we looked it up and we saw the different
Man,
people's layouts of the heavens, and it's the exact same thing culture to culture.
It's all over the place. Yep. So, phenomenologically or experientially, the Earth is flat. Now, that doesn't mean that the Earth is actually flat.
Right.
That just means that at an experiential level, what you and I experience, it appears as though we are standing on just a flat piece of land. No matter where you go, it feels that way, right? Experientially.
Right. It's just easier to explain things that way
yeah.
instead of how they actually are.
Well, that's the language of experience, or that's phenomenology. That doesn't mean that the Earth is flat. There are various passages in the Bible that talk about it being, you know, a sphere, and God has hung it, and, you know, that kind of language. So I think the Bible affirms both. There's this God's perspective outside
right.
of it, and then there's man's perspective inside of it. So anyway, so in this ancient cosmology, the way that it kind of worked was, so you've got this disk, and then you've got this firmament that goes above it, this dome, right? And this dome separates the waters below on Earth from the waters above in heaven, right? So whenever the waters, the windows in heaven are opened and water comes down,
right.
that's the thought. And so yep. what the world tree, the tree of life, is the thing that shoves that to the margins. Okay, you can kind of think of so that's a symbol. So the tree is a symbol for space, time and space. They map left to right. So heaven and earth, it's above and below. Time and space is left to right. Okay,
yeah.
And so you can kind of think of it this way: space exists within time, and it supports time. It holds it up. It's you could say it's masculine. It supports. Right, and It supports the waters, which are feminine.
Right.
The moon, you know, that kind of thing. And I know that this sounds foreign to people, but you're just going to have to work with us.
Yep.
But that's what's going on here, okay? And so the way that this gets depicted in the ancient world is you have waters that are above and they go come around. In some mythologies, that's depicted as a serpent, like in Norse mythology. There's this world serpent. I can't remember its name. It's like Young something, Young Nibir or something. I can't think of it either. But it's like universal.
Right.
You kind of see it in like...
you'll see it in like ancient maps of the ocean and
yeah,
things too.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Like this chaos serpent on the margins.
That's it. And so the interesting thing is that Khonshu is related to that.
Yep.
He's like the chaos serpent on the edge of the world. And in Christianity, like, he's related to the serpent, like in the garden, which is, right. is Satan. He's the Lord of Darkness, the Lord of Night, which Khonshu is also related to.
I mean, if you think
to.
About it, the moon is on the outer edge of the Earth's orbit. So, I mean,
yeah.
it makes a lot of sense that he would be a god of chaos, of things in the margin, of things on the outer edges.
Oh, I forgot to say this, too. When you the chaos part that you mentioned there reminded me. Time and space are what happens when heaven and earth agree and don't agree.
Yeah.
You get one or the other, okay? This is important to know, so I got to go back and cover it. So that you have the dominion of time when heaven and earth don't agree. And you see that in the flood with Noah.
Yep.
Okay? And what do you get with the flood of Noah? You get waters.
Yep.
Right? It rains come from the heaven. The rain and the waters from the depths of the earth come up as well. It's like the firmament is opened and it's filled with water. Okay, that's the dominion of time. And what happens is the dominion of space looks like the dry ground, right?
Yep.
So one is stability, the other is chaos. One is order, the other is chaos. So that's important for people to know. I'll repeat it. Time is what you get when heaven and earth don't agree. Space and support is what you get when heaven and earth do agree.
Right.
Okay. But anyway, so Khonshu's related to this. He's like the serpent in Egyptian mythology. Now, there's another parallel here between him and Satan as well. So he's said in Egyptian myth to fertilize the cosmic egg.
Yep.
In the creation of the world. Now, there's something similar. In Genesis 3, there's this talk of a serpent and a seed, but it's different. So that's a seed. This is an egg. So there's a masculine and feminine difference there between the two. Seed is masculine. An egg is feminine, right? The seed fertilizes the egg. But it's an interesting play on it here. So in Egyptian myth, Khonshu fertilizes the egg. In Israelite creation story, the seed crushes the head of the serpent. So something really interesting going on there. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but I suspect that an Egyptian who was worshiping Khonshu would have heard the Egyptian or the Israelite story there, and they'd be like, "Huh, the head of our god is getting trampled here."
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here? So, I don't know. So, anyway, I don't know if you got anything you want to add to that, but that's just me spitting random things here. But it's interesting, though, that, like, this isn't a Marvel show.
Yeah.
And, like, there's deep spirituality tied to this.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's clear from their latest projects in general that there's some group behind the scenes that are really doing the research into things like this.
Mm. Yeah. You know, another thing that I found interesting is just how pervasive this worldview is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it ends up in Ohio, like at the Serpent Mound there. Like, the same exact image. Like, you have this serpent who is devouring an egg or a seed. And it's like, how does that worldview just end up here?
Right.
You know, in Ohio River Valley. And, you know, it's to the scattering of the nations, you know. We did a Patreon episode talking about possible ways that could have happened. Yep. So if you want to hear our take on that, you can listen to that. You become a patron and you can tune into that video. But, man, it's just so bringing this back around now. This is why I find it interesting. Marvel is exporting spirituality.
They are.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy.
They are repackaging paganism and slapping superhero labels on it, is all that it is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I enjoy the show.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And but at the same time, I realize that it is opening people up for the re-enchantment of the world.
Right.
But in a possibly negative way. Right. So one of the things that you see here, and this is, I think, the negative part, is that these people become avatars for these gods. And basically, an avatar is you're possessed by that spirit. And so you see the avatar of Khonshu, which is Mark Spector, Stephen, right? And then you see an avatar for a banished god named Amit. And you're going to, in the third episode, you're going to see more avatars for, you know, Osiris and, you know, some of those other gods. But it's interesting because the spirituality that they are exporting to people that could possibly make people become curious about this is, like, it's a spirituality where you're possessed by a pagan spirit.
Right.
And I find that worrisome in some ways, right? I think in some ways it's really similar to what we were talking about on Witch Talk.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to talk about the similarities between Marvel exporting, you know, this kind of spiritual worldview and the similarities that it has on Witch Talk. But how, Richie, how would you say that this is similar to what we saw on Witch Talk last week?
I mean, just...
I think it was last week.
The aspect of the avatars in this, in the Moon Knight series, really relates a lot to what's going on Witch Talk. I mean, we used to call them teeny bopper, like hippie witches.
Right.
Like they were into like the new age, like crystals and things, but there's been a shift.
Health foods and veganism and all that, yeah.
But there's been a shift from that sort of folk magic, naturalism, into full-on deity worship. Mm-hmm. And you have these children, really, on TikTok showing each other how to use divination tools to divine which deity is trying to connect and work with him and to be the wants them to be a conduit for their will.
That was the thing that stood out to me whenever I was thinking about this. I was like, okay, you know, Richie talked about working with spirits in the Witch Talk section that we did for the uncut section in last week's episode, which we released everywhere.
Right.
So everybody should have listened to that by now. And I was like, and it's very similar to what's going on here in Moon Knight. Like, they are becoming a conduit for the gods, for these spirits.
Let me just, I mean, you see this Egyptian, in Moon Knight, all the Egyptian influence. You see this in the high occult orders. Like, Aleister Crowley had a ton of Egyptian symbolism in his work.
Well, that's where he first had contact with Iwas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He had went to Egypt.
Right.
Yeah.
And this symbolism was in there, but you have master magicians and occultists like Aleister Crowley, who even they had a line. They didn't tend to be a conduit to any sort of one deity. Like, they would interact with spirits, but they didn't dedicate themselves to the service of one particular being. You have people on Witch Talk who are dedicating their practices, their lives, they're making sacrifices to deities. I mean, it's literally a rebirth of paganism is what it looks like.
Yeah. And so, to bring this back around, as much as I enjoy the show and I find it entertaining, I do have some concerns here. Like, it is priming people. Like, so for example, I have counseled men who have come through our local church who really found Odinism to be attractive.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a thing until Marvel popularized Odinism and Thor in their movies. Like, you look anywhere, and you'll see that a lot of the popularity and the revival of Norse paganism is due to Marvel.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I would talk to men about, a couple of men, was they'd say, you know, they found the serving this warrior god very attractive as a man, is very masculine.
Yeah, that's the whole thing behind it, especially for men.
Yeah.
The masculinity tied to it.
Well, you, I mean, you even see that with, like, Jack Donovan.
Right.
You know, out there and all that, which I know that we have some people who are, you know, friends and have worked with Jack Donovan who listen into our podcast. But, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, the popularity of Thor for Marvel. And so I just wonder if Moon Knight is going to do the same thing for Egyptian mythology that it's done for Norse mythology. Like, if we're going to have people here not too long from now who are going to be working with Khonshu or Amit or...
Oh, I don't doubt it. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I think I may have told you about it. People talking about Moon Knight and diving into Egyptian history and the pantheon and them talking about the creation myth.
Yeah.
The very sexualized Egyptian creation myth.
Yeah, you have Tefnut who... Hold your kids' ears, who masturbates things into existence in the Egyptian myth. I remember the first time that I told some... So we've been preaching through Genesis. And whenever we were talking about Israel's creation story, in the ancient Near Eastern worldview, it's contrasted against competing creation myths, like the Egyptian creation myth, the Babylonian creation myth, all of those. And whenever I was telling some of our leaders in our congregation about the creation myth for Egypt and the whole thing with Tefnut there and, you know, all of that, like, they were like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that, like, this is in a creation myth, you know?
Well,
that
I mean, from paganism, they're very focused on natural revelation. So you look at the basics of biology. I mean, you have seed and egg, the creation, life.
Yeah.
So it
makes sense.
It makes complete sense to a pagan.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. And so I think that's interesting. I think that's really valuable, that having you to be able to say, well, this is how that makes sense. And so that brings me back around to, like, okay, there are other people out there who think that this makes sense. Like, there are people out there who are able to read natural revelation. And they know how life works.
And I think it's more attractive to people who are coming from families from this generation that was sort of the last stand for atheism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have still this inerrant hostility towards organized religion, mm-hmm. so they cling to natural revelation.
Yeah.
And paganism is rooted in that, so it's an easy.
Well, I find that for the people who are spiritual but not religious.
Yeah.
Paganism is a great place.
Oh, absolutely.
Place. Yeah, it's, and so
just observe nature.
Yeah, and so I think that's probably what will happen. I think that Moon Knight will probably. I won't be surprised if you see people who.
Oh
work
yeah, there was back to the witch talk. There were people in there talking about the stories of digging into research about Pharaoh being believed to be this deity on Earth.
Yeah.
So to make sure that the Nile stayed fruitful, mm-hmm. in relation to that creation myth,
they would go and.
Him and his priests and his buddies would literally...
Go and masturbate into the Nile.
Into the Nile.
Yeah. This is the episode where everybody's going to be like... They're going to refer to this as the masturbation episode.
I mean, you got the phallic images of the tree.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. We've been talking about that. It fits in, right?
It's basic symbolism.
Yeah, it's basic symbolism. You know, you've got this phallic tree, and then you've got the circle... That right. goes around the world, right? That's it's masculine and feminine,
right?
So it fits into what we're talking about here. But yeah, I'm not going to be surprised if people in the next few years, like if you're a pastor, I won't be surprised if you won't run across people who've been working with Khonshu and Egyptian deities.
It's not a big jump. I mean, especially if you have pagans already. Or working with their counterparts in other religions, so within other pantheons. Like, you'll have Artemis mm-hmm. is the moon goddess in Greco-Roman mythologies. I mean, you could easily take that and transfer that to Khonshu.
Yeah. I feel like I haven't checked into this. I feel like there's something to do with Kronos and Khonshu as well, because in other places, Khonshu is referred to as Kronos, and Kronos also has to do with time as well.
When we dove into those primordial deities, like that predate the Olympians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were the deities of primal forces, so like time, space.
Yeah, well, you have that. Yeah, you have that in a lot of the myths, like where you have this like feminine water deity who is battling this, or it's a water deity who is battling this masculine deity who is from above. Like you see this in like the Babylonian right. myth, like with Marduk. You also see it in the Egyptian mythology. You even see it in Norse mythology with Odin and his brothers and the frost giant. So frost right. is related to water as well. But usually what they always do is they end up having this battle between the primordial deity and the deity that's from heaven. And then the primordial water deity is defeated, and then the earth and creation is made from their body.
Yeah,
like you even see something similar to that in Marvel. You
oh
know,
yeah,
with Nowhere, and it's from the head of a celestial.
Yep.
And that kind of thing. But basically, what that is it's this time and space battle, heaven and earth, right? Like water is earthy; it's related to time, chaos, right? It's heaven and space, stability, conquering the chaos and time. So, it fits into what we're saying.
It does a lot. Yeah.
So, really interesting. I know there's probably going to be a lot of questions about this episode
yep.
because we've talked about flat Earth. We've talked about other mythologies. We've talked about world trees. We've talked about world
circles. Masturbating in the Nile. Yeah,
phallic images. We've talked about trees supporting serpents around the world.
Right.
So I want to say this. Just hold on. Like, because Richie and I have been discussing doing a series on ancient cosmology. Now, don't get me wrong. We touched on it a little bit whenever we did our re-enchanting the cosmos or the heavens and the earth. And,
yeah.
you know, we touched on some of it there, but not the depth that we're going to touch on it in this new series whenever we get around to doing that. But one of the things we want to do is lay out a little bit fuller what we talked about today. Like, we've been talking about the whole flat earth thing and
yeah.
And the distinction that we make that the earth is phenomenologically, experientially flat from our perspective, but
right.
from God's perspective and outside of the normal human experience, it's not. It's round.
And
it's spherical.
Surprisingly, I mean, academia and the science pushers can't really lay attacks on people who have these views because we just seen that video with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And him talking about experientially about the tides, remember?
Yeah. I remember that video. It was like last week or something you showed me that. But we're going to do a video on this, and we're going to touch on cosmology a little bit, how, like, in the ancient worldview, everybody held that, like, we stand on this flat ground. The earth is not moving, right?
Right.
The thing that is moving is the sun and the moon in the firmament above us. It's like they're chasing one another. One's like a chariot. It's like a chariot going.
Right.
You know, Psalm is David talks about the Psalms, but it's fixed in the firmament. The stars are fixed in the firmament, and then above that you have what C.S. Lewis and other medievalists called the seven heavens. Right. That's the heavenlies above the firmament. Right.
right.
And so beyond that, you know, you end up getting to the other planets. I'm looking at some.
Just set aside our newly gained technological achievements, like in space and flight, and this new bird's eye, God's eye view of Earth in creation that we have now. Lay all that aside and look at things from an ancient human's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Feet flat on the Earth. Looking up at the night sky, I mean, it's not, you could literally say that the earth is flat. You can talk about all these things that we've been talking about from an experiential level, and it's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we don't want you to hear us and say that we're like flat earthers.
Right.
We're looking at this from an ancient perspective, a human first person perspective. while also saying that from the third person perspective, from God's perspective, who's right. outside of time.
That's a good way to separate it. Human yeah. perspective and
human
God's
and God's perspective. Yeah. So we do affirm. You can affirm both.
Right.
You don't have like you don't have to say that what it's one or the other. But above that, you know, you've got the seven heavens, and then you've got the Imperium. And then you've got where God is at in the highest heavens above that. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the episode that we're going to do on ancient cosmology. And it'll help make sense of a lot of the stuff that you're reading in the Bible. Right. Like where it talks about, you know, like, you know, the sun stood still and, you know, and the... where it talks about the earth being like flat and there's this hard firmament. That's true from the human perspective. That's what it looks like. The sky looks like a blue dome.
Right.
And it would look blue because there's a firmament there that separates the waters above from the waters below. So there's waters above it.
Right.
So it's blue. And then we'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll talk about the seven heavens above that, you know, and all of that. So anyway, so if any of this sounds foreign to you, it won't for too long because we're going to talk about it a little bit fuller. So, Richie, we're coming in over 40 minutes now on Moon Knight. I wasn't expecting...
On a Chinwag episode.
On a Chinwag episode. And so we're not going to have time to talk about anything else on this. It's Moon Knight just ate it up.
Yep.
It's the dominion of time, right?
Right.
It's the... You would expect nothing else talking about Khonshu, who is who is a the serpent who devours time.
Right.
Yeah. So... So anyway, let us know your thoughts on this episode. If you learned anything, if you're confused about anything. Or
probably confused about a lot.
I'm probably confused about a whole lot. So let us know, and maybe we'll do a video talking about some of the stuff that's confusing. Like I said, we are going to get around to some of it in a series that we're going to be doing.
Probably a lot of worries that I have some secret Khonshu cult.
No, there
like
is no
worshiping
secret.
The moon god or something like that.
No, there is no secret Khonshu cult. But the thing I think it is
it, or is that like the first rule of Fight Club, that there is no Fight Club?
No, there's nobody's going to believe me whatever I say now because
right.
of that. But let's. This stuff seems foreign to a lot of people because they've not learned to insert themselves into the stories.
Right.
You know, and C.S. Lewis talks about this in his Reflections on a Toolshed, that he talks about this, there's this light beam, right? And you can, there's two ways to experience this light beam. One is you can step outside of it, and you can see it shining in, and you can look at it, and you can examine it. That's the third person perspective. But another way that you can experience it is you can step into the beam and see by it.
Right.
That's the first-person perspective. And so a lot of what Richie and I are doing is we're stepping outside of this third-person perspective, and we're stepping into the first-person perspective, and that allows us to be able to make sense of a lot of this stuff that seems extremely confusing to people. Like the stuff you were talking about earlier with the Egyptian mythology. Right. Like, and like... You're like, oh, I can see how they would do that because seed and this, it makes life. A lot of people aren't trained to think that way. And like,
I think my history with
that's what I was about
paganism
to say. Yeah.
really programmed my thinking when it comes to things like that.
That's what I was about
where
to say.
I go to first when I examine a lot of things.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Your history is a pagan, and then mine is a pastor and studying a lot of just weird stuff in between.
Yep.
Like, that's really given us a way to talk about a lot of these things that not a lot of other people were talking about out there. There are some people out there talking about some of this stuff. You know, Jonathan Peugeot, Mike Heiser, James B. Jordan, Peter Lighthart, Michael Bull, even one of our listeners, Non-Tenant, he's talking about some of this stuff on his blog. So there are some people who are talking about some of these things out there. There's not a lot of them, but...
Right.
That they are, and so we think that that's something unique that we can that our podcast contributes. So, all right. Anyway, if you guys, I'm rambling. So, if you guys want more, head on over to our Patreon, www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. For just $5 a month, you can get the Sword and Staff Uncut, and not only that, but you get episodes delivered to you faster. You get a bunch of bonus content that we don't release anywhere else, right? We've got a right. Patreon-only Q&A that we've got to record and release to our patrons. We do those on a monthly basis. So you get to ask us any question that you want, and we will answer it. And so there's just a lot of perks to being a patron. So head on over there, check that out, and consider joining. Every little bit that you support, it helps us out a lot. Also, make sure to leave this episode and our podcast a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening on. Give us an honest 5-star review. But that helps us to be found. It helps with search engine optimization and all of those types of things. So please consider doing that. It would be a major help to us. So Richie, do you have anything else to say before we move on to our next episode that we're going to release this week, which is on the metaphysics of Holy Week?
I do. Josh may or may not be sacrificed to Khonshu if he doesn't get the website live and running.
Yeah, this is
very soon.
This is the busiest. So this is the busiest week of my year. And then on top of the I'm busy anyway. So I am slacking on the website. I know that we've told you guys that it would
be this non-existent Khonshu cult.
Yeah, this non-existent.
Josh will be sacrificed if he doesn't get this website up. Like it's we have the domain. We have a basic structure. We're filling it in. It's just...
buddy. He's already been dethroned. You know, Colossians 2:14-15. He's been made a mockery.
Oh, here
already.
We go.
Don't have to deal with him. You're always a warrior.
Yep.
He kills the princes in Psalm 82, so you don't have to worry about no Khonshu cult. He's dead.
Like he's dead.
He's dead. Post-mill. So, anyway.
Oh, gosh.
I'm about. If I could, I would drop this mic right now, but
drop
I can't.
It.
I can't. It's on an arm.
And our mics are on their last leg, some of them, at this point.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you had fun. Oh,
what
my goodness.
On?
I thought that was country music. I was like, Richie, you don't strike me as a country music guy.
That was Casting Crowns.
That was Casting Crowns.
And that was Yahweh's way of reminding us that Khonshu is dead.
That was his way of reminding you. I already know.
I mean, I just need a reminder.
You just need a reminder. All right, guys. Well, all jokes aside, we hope that you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you guys next time.
See you then.
See you.